On today's episode, we have Aswe Ighodalo, a founding partner at Banwo and Ighodalo. Established in 1991, Banwo and Ighodalo is one of Nigeria's leading law firms with over 80 solicitors to date. Aswe is also a board guru, serving on various boards, including the Sterling Bank, the Nigerian Sovereign Investment Authority, and the Nigerian Economic Summit Group. Interviewing him today is Odunoluwa Lunge. Odu is a co-founder at DIY Law. DIY Law is Nigeria's foremost legal technology startup. Odu is also a co-founder and lead counsel of the Lunge practice. Join us as we listen to their journey in entrepreneurship in the Nigerian legal industry.
Hello, sir.
Hi, morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much. I'm like really excited to speak with you. I started reading about you like days ago. So let's just get into the crux.
I'm happy you're here.
Thank you, sir.
Odu.
Yes.
Did I pronounce it correctly?
Yes, you did. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming.
Yes. Yeah. So I was reading about how you got into law, and it looks like it wasn't your decision. It was your dad that made you study law. So my first question will be, any regrets?
No. I'm happy that I got convinced to study law by my father, and I think I've enjoyed the ride. I've enjoyed being a lawyer. Mm. I've enjoyed the aspect of the law in which I found myself, in which I've specialized. And I'm glad that I think I've made a little contribution to the development of legal practice in Nigeria. So I'm glad. If I had to do it all over again, I probably would do the same thing now with better knowledge, but I'll probably do it even better. You know? But yeah. I'm glad I'm a lawyer.
So you're probably the school of thought, fathers know best.
No. I don't know if it's that he knew best at the time. Mm. But my father just had the philosophy that every child should have a profession. Where they can do things by themselves and on their own. Whatever you then do with your profession, it's then okay, you know. But that was just his own school of thought. He was of the old school of thought. I knew from a very early, I thought from very early that I wanted to be an investment banker. You know, it was the rave in those days, the mid-70s, you know, the investment bankers were the people that were the happening people, that kind of thing. So I wanted to be an investment banker. So I studied economics first. And I was just thinking of doing an MBA. But my father had wanted me to study law because when I left King's College, or when I was leaving King's College in Form 5, I'd been admitted to study law in the University of Ife through the prelim. Right? Yeah. So just I had the prelim thing there. But number one, I didn't want to go to Ife. Number one, for different reasons. Number two, my mother had this policy of wanting us to spend our A-level years at home. Which I think was good for family bonding, you know. So my sister before me, when she left Queen's College, had done 2 years at home, A-levels, you know, at international school, because we lived in Ibadan. So that's my mother wanted. And I really didn't like Ife, you know. If I'd liked Ife as a university, fine, you know. I had once set my sights on two things. Either I go to UI or I go to London School of Economics. That's where my sights were. So I didn't mind spending the 2 years at home, which also helped me. So I went to international school after I left King's College for 2 years, and then I did my A-levels, and then I went to the University of Ibadan to study economics. So my thinking was that after that I'll do an MBA, and then I'll come back as an investment banker. So it was, my father then, my A-level years then said, you know, this law and all that. And I said, you know, that it was still this law now. No? And then again, I got admitted to University of Lagos after my A-levels to study law. And I got admitted to University of Ibadan to study economics, you know. No brainer, I was going to study economics. So, and you know, it was also a fantastic thing for me because I grew up near the university, you know. The economics department had greatest minds in economics in Africa or even in the world. Ojetunji Aboyade, Professor Edozien, you know, Professor, we also had Professor Phillips, Dr. Phillips, you know, they were just the Jimmy Banefo, they were world authorities, you know. So sitting down in an economics class in UI was like a secret, sitting down in an economics class anywhere in the world, Harvard, LSE, anywhere. So it was a no-brainer for me, you know. And then I had a lot of friends around the area. So, but again, all throughout my economic study, my father kept harping on this law. So one day I then said to him, if you send me abroad, I'll study law. So he says, okay, if you get to the top university abroad, I'll send you abroad. So I started the process. Again, I got admitted to 3 universities for law, Cambridge, LSC, and then Buckingham University. For me, again, because I always dreamt about LSC, I read a lot about LSC. There's some of my favorite people who have been LSC students. Kennedy went to LSC for a study period, you know. So, and then I had a friend who was in LSC at the time, a friend is pastor now, Bankole Aluko, who was studying an LLM in law. And then when I mentioned it to him, he took me to see a guy called Lord Wedderburn. Lord Wedderburn was in charge of company law and commercial law at the LSC. I spent half an hour with him. And Lord Wedderburn advised prime ministers, and he was a world authority, you know. So it was done, you know. I went to Cambridge for interviews too, and Buckingham, and they were a great institution. I loved them, but my experience with Lord Wedderburn just turned it, you know. I found myself studying law.
Listening to your story, clearly you had a lot of like role models, a lot of people that inspired you. You know, you went to UI, your choice of going to UI was your choice of lecturer. Your choice of going to LSE was also who you met. But we were in...
I've been thinking about LSE all my life. Let me tell you, I'm a John F. Kennedy fan. And so when you read Profiles in Courage and some of John F. Kennedy's books, his time at the LSC was very, very telling. Mm-hmm. You know, it was very impactful on him. Mm-hmm. And then there was the Trotskyite period where he had the leftist period. Yes. And it was like a sexy period in the history of British politics when the LSC brand of economics was dominant. Mm-hmm. You know, the leftist Trotskyite kind of economics. So, and when you read all of these books, you start reading when you're growing up and you start forming ideas, you know, it impacts you. So that was it. You know, and LSC was just LSC. Yeah. LSC is just a unique institution, just LSC. But if you go through a 3-year course in LSC, you're a different person.
Yeah.
That's all.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be one of my later questions, but because you said books at all, we live in a country where very few people write books that are practical, that inspire young entrepreneurs, you know. I can't think of any book by a Nigerian author, a self-made Nigerian author, that tells me, this is how I did it, this is what I want to do. You know, you find a lot of books of American, Western world that inspire you and tell you step by step. When it comes to the Nigerian books, there are books, but you see, thanks to God, I was lucky. You know, we don't find those steps. And hey, you know, my question is, have you ever thought of, is that something you would like to do? Have you ever, you were 60 this year. You have a lot of experience, and congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I don't want to feel 60.
but I
feel it now. You know, when I go up in the morning, you know, sometimes my back creaks, you know, that kind of thing. But you know, yes, thank you.
So is this something you've ever thought about, you know, writing your experience? I did this, this is what made me study, this is how I built my business of law, my legal field.
Good question. I've been encouraging people to write, particularly people in the political space, particularly in the political history of Nigeria, and where we seem to have got things wrong. Because I have a side gig. I teach political history and economic history of Nigeria. I started with NLI, Nigerian Leadership Initiative, which was where I first met her. And she was the secretary of the Nigerian Leadership Initiative. So I used to teach a class, you know, Nigeria's political and economic history from 1865 to present day. And I now still teach it, you know, occasionally when NLI still has programs, but specifically now for a program being run in Kaduna by the governor of Kaduna State, the Kashim Ibrahim Fellows, you know. So I teach it there. So because of that, you know, I have done a lot more research, and it used to be my hobby, I guess, political history, since I was young, you know. So I've done a lot more research there. So I'm pretty concerned about, you know, where Nigeria went wrong. What were the things we should have done, we didn't do, you know. So when I meet Nigeria's political figures, historic and all that, that are still alive and who haven't written, I try to encourage them. I ran into General Gowon at a function some time back, and I've been and I told him there's few things that you need for posterity. General Johnson, who just passed, I know he wrote a book. One of the from my research and experience, one of the straightforward and more truthful books about the experience in those years. So anybody I know who was a personality in those days, like, so, but from a direct answer to your question, so I've never thought about myself writing a book. I've always been more on people writing their own experiences. So now you mention it, I think about it, you know. Maybe after Mr. Fola Adeola, who's my boy, has written a book,
then I'll write.
But yeah, it's something I'll think about. In fairness, I think I need to gather a bit more experience and a bit more wisdom. So if God spares my life and I live to 70, I'll write a book.
Wow. You need to gather more experience.
I need to gather more wisdom. Because every day we get different experiences.
Absolutely.
Every day we get more wisdom. Yeah. So I think a good time for me to write would be if I live that long till I was 70. Yeah. I think then people will have something worthwhile to read.
So you should start reading, writing before you're 70, then we launch it when you're 70.
I don't need 10 years.
I will remind you.
Yes, please. God spare us.
Yes, I will.
I think I'll have something worthwhile to contribute. And I agree with you that we need role models, you know. I growing up also had my role models, you know, people I read about. Mm-hmm. I've always thought I liked John F. Kennedy's politics and his courage as a young man in governance, you know, and the razzmatazz around him, you know. Mm-hmm. So growing up myself, so I have a lot of JFK books I've read.
Wow.
I even went to this museum, you know, the JFK museum. I went to the place where he was shot, you know, so I'm a JFK fan, you know, that way. And a couple of other leaders that have influenced me, you know, I love Lee Kuan Yew.
Yes.
For what he achieved in Singapore. Well. People say Singapore is a small country, anybody could achieve, but it's not correct.
Yeah.
You know, I also like Mahathir. Mm-hmm. I don't like him as much as I like Lee Kuan Yew, but I like Mahathir too with what he's done with Malaysia,
yes.
You know? And I have a few favorites along the way for different reasons. Mm-hmm. Margaret Thatcher for her courage and decisiveness, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I have world leaders I like. I love Bill Clinton too, in a way, you know? I love Bill Clinton, you know, in a way, he's a great president. And I regret that Hillary Clinton didn't become president of America, because I believe she would have made a great president and the world would be a better place. So I love it. When we come back home to Nigeria, I have a few favorites. And I have a few favorites, but I also know that those favorites didn't go the long haul, you know. Definitely Chimamanda Adichie is a favorite of mine.
Okay.
I had cause to interact very closely with Chimamanda Adichie, so I have a soft spot for him. And Chipola Ige, I have a soft spot for him. I like parts of President Obasanjo. I like some parts of him, you know, which brought him to the cusp of greatness, and then but the other parts didn't let him proceed. General Gowon, for his age and his time, did fairly well, you know. And when I talk about the history of Nigeria, you know, I think if three people had done things differently, Nigeria would have been a different country. And when we talk about history and politics, sometimes I'll tell you about that theory. But there are three people, three leaders, that if they'd done things differently, Nigeria would have been a great country, greater than Singapore or anywhere else. If three people had done things differently. But we'll talk about that later. But coming back to the law, you know, there's some lawyers I grew up to like. I worked with Chief Chris Ogubanjo my first 5.5-6 years as a lawyer. And really, honestly, it's an experience that anybody that aspires to be a corporate of commercial lawyer should have. Chief Ogubanjo is amazing and he's commercially brilliant. You know, and I learned from him. And the great thing about him was that he exposed you. You know, there was nothing hidden I started doing transactions from when I was 1 year at the bar. I started doing, and once he saw that you had capacity, he had confidence in you. And when you show confidence in people like that, they never want to let you down. And so they strive to give their best, you know. And I've always learned to work hard from my parents when I grew up anyway. So working hard wasn't a problem. So I could do 20-hour work, you know. And he just kept on encouraging you and supporting you. And so teaching you and learning and supporting you and being behind you. So I had a great 6 years. And if they each over you at the time, if you had a proper partnership structure, I'd probably still be in the firm.
Yeah.
You know, because it was a wonderful experience. And I learned so much from him, so much, you know. So again, you know, sometimes you started talking about grace of God and luck, you know. The grace of God and luck took me to Chief Ogubanjo. you know, because it was by chance, you know. Tokumbo, his oldest, he's one of his older sons now. Yeah. He's my friend, you know, and we knew each other socially.
Yes.
And, you know, from social interaction, Tokumbo and I became close. Tokumbo must have thought I was responsible enough to work in his father's firm. So when I was doing my law school internship,
yeah,
you know, I went to the firm. During the law school internship, the people around there must have liked me a bit. So they asked me that, would I come back, you know, and all that. And that's how I started working there. So it's providence, you know. Yeah. I could have worked anywhere else because I was looking at five or six other law firms, you know. Mm-hmm. But providence, you know.
Yeah.
So there's some, and I believe in God and I trust God. So I know there's the hand of God in your life. I know that clearly, you know. But it's what you do with that hand that's dealt, that's key. Yeah. So I had a wonderful 6 years with Chief Okubanjo. And he exposed me, he exposed me beyond compare, you know, and which is what I've also tried to do here. You know, once people show competence and capacity, I just let them go, you know, from young age, you know, I let them go. So, so that was a great beginning for me. From then on, you know, the sky was the limit. My first few years starting off, you know, one of the things, let me take you back, one of the things I was clear about was that I wanted to go into a partnership.
Okay.
I wanted a proper partnership because I was clear that I wanted to also build an institution that would sustain.
Yeah.
You know, I was from early on, from my exposure with Chief Okubanjo, I was in meetings internationally. I was in meetings in London, in New York. You know, I went with Chief, I went on my own, I went with other colleagues, you know. And I was seeing law firms that were 200 years old, 300 years old. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, what's the problem with Nigeria? And if you look at Nigeria, again, you come back to my research on our political and economic history.
Yeah.
There's no Nigerian institution that has sustained at the top for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that has sustained, but I'm saying that sustained at the top, founded by indigenous Nigerians.
Yeah.
There's none.
Yeah.
You know, or let me put it differently. There's no Nigerian institution that has sustained beyond the founders.
Mm-hmm.
Once the founders have gone, then those institutions have kind of dissipated.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, it's also, I think it's my own other pet theory that also has affected our development because it's capital formation.
Mm.
And then the next generation, capital dissipation.
Mm.
So you cannot build capital long term. Mm. Now, an economy that can't build capital long term cannot sustain at all. You know, you know, so there's that. And then, so I really was concerned, you know, I wasn't even looking at it from the capital formation perspective. I was looking at it as how come we have all these international, all these great lawyers. When I was growing up, Chief Rooks, you know, there. Chief Anikari, Chief Okubanjo, Chief Aolowo, Chief Kenny Shukola, Apao Mishube. So all those great names that could have held their own anywhere in the world. How come, you know, we weren't building institutions?
Yeah.
We're building persons and personalities, weren't building institutions. So for me, it was clear that if I was going to stay in this practice of the law and I was going to start my own shop, it had to be a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
At least I will give it my best
read
to sustain it, you know. So that formed in my mind. So that also determined for me the structure and the choice of partner, you know. And so I started looking through friendships and relationships and lawyers that were competent, and I started looking for people that approximated my values and my thinking. And I narrowed down to two or three people, and I finally narrowed down to Femi Lubang, my partner now.
Mm-hmm.
And we spoke for over a year. The kind of law firm we wanted, the kind of things we wanted, and we both shared this thing about sustainability and about wanting to create a proper partnership. One of the things we also have in common is that he and I are two of the least greedy people I know, which also works for us. You know, we really didn't care very much about money, which isn't good. You really should care about money. You know, but we really didn't care very much about money, at least for a long time until the pressures of life started hitting us. So because there was no greed factor, the kind of greed and ego things that affect relationships, particularly in partnership, didn't affect us. The strategy, we could differ on strategy, we could differ on other things, but we never differed on, you know, if I was away for a while and I came back, I never asked Femi, how did you spend money? How did you spend money?
Yeah.
And if he was away for a while, we didn't even bother about that, you know, until we then started meeting each other with the partnership. That's when we had a proper structure. But as far as money, you need money, you take it. It doesn't work for other people, but it worked for us. But it also sustained us and built the foundation. So when in future we ever had a rocky issues on other matters, because of the strong foundation we had built, it helped us to survive, you know. So that was it, you know. And then we're clear in our minds what we wanted. And then we're clear in our minds the kind of law firm we wanted. and we're clear in our minds the kind of people we wanted in the law firm, you know. So once we were clear about that, you know, and you know, any business, particularly service business, is about people. Absolutely. We're clear in our minds that we'll try and pick the best people we find. We're clear in our minds we'll train them, and we're clear in our minds that we'll have a culture and value that we will invite in them. So we're clear about all those things, you know. Yeah. And so we started working, and it was hard work, you know. Trying to run an institution, trying to cope with people, and then at the same time trying to beg people for work. You know, people don't like service in Nigeria, don't like paying for service.
Absolutely.
In Nigeria. So that's another issue, and that's another story for another day. If I'm going to write, maybe I'll write in that area. Because people want super service, they want great service, they don't want to pay for it, you know? And I keep shaking my head that, how does it interrelate? How do you want something really good, and you don't want to pay for it if it's really good?
Yeah.
And then you find people paying for bad things, and they're ready to pay a lot of money for bad things, rather than paying for the right good thing, you know? Anyway, that's another story. So it's really tough. Well, we also made up our minds about certain things. Integrity was going to be key. Now, it's not a cliche. People say that, but for me, it has worked for us, you know? And I believe, and I tell people that every day, you know, that people, you know, it depends on how you make money. If you make money the right way, it sustains, I believe.
Yeah.
If you make money the wrong way, you make money, you'll be rich, but it never sustains. I have seen it, you know? But anyway, there was going to be integrity ingrained in the culture of the firm. So we're going to have a firm run on the lines of true value and integrity. Our lawyers were going to be, we had zero tolerance for people that had no integrity, zero tolerance, you know. And we were also going to lead by example. We weren't saints, but we're also going to create good value, and we're also going to act to the highest ethical standard. So we stayed there. So when we started, neither of us started the law firm by taking clients from where we're coming from. So our first 1 week, genuinely, we had no clients. So we read newspaper, and we started thinking of how we would work. And you know, that's when, you know, family and friends step up. You know, so our first few clients, family, friends, but again, you know, people have this experience and think that, you know, those people who promised you or you think will help will be the people who help. But you find out that when you're at that stage and you start, help comes from the most unlikely sources. So the kind of experience we had too. So we had help from the most unlikely sources, and then family and friends joined in. And so the first 1 year was tough, really tough, really tough, because we chose to start that way. We chose to start with a clean slate. Many people think it was a foolish move, but I don't think so. I think we've been blessed because of the way we chose to start. And like I tell you, I have this my thing about divine intervention and divine hand of God. I think we've been blessed, and we've been blessed beyond our dreams and expectations, you know. And one of the things we also insisted was that we were going to always give our best and try to ensure that our best was good enough. So we tried our best to provide excellent service as quickly as possible. We also try to get into our clients, to understand our clients, to understand their needs. As far as we're concerned, we're problem solvers. We're mathematicians, we're problem solvers. So we wanted anybody that walked through our doors, we were going to solve their problem within the ambits of the law. That's what we, that's our business, you know? And that's it, and that's how we approached the law. And we gave it everything we had. There were times we slept in the office for days sometimes. Sometimes it's my wife would bring a change of clothes for me and food and things like that. So that was it. But what was important to us was client satisfaction. And I think the market started noticing our efforts. And from there on, we then started getting a lot more interesting clients, you know, and started working with internationals. Clients started having confidence in us, and we started doing big ticket items, and that's it.
Interesting. You know, you've touched on so many things I wanted to ask you about, and I'll go back to one. You said you spent 6 years with Crystal Kupanja and Co. So would you say it was because, you know, I'm also looking at young lawyers who might be listening to this. When is a good time to start your practice? Is it time or quality?
I'll tell you something. I'm a fan of sustainability.
Absolutely.
One of the things I've tried to do in our law firm is that my best people over the years, I've tried hard to keep them. I've lost a few, painfully, you know, but by and large, yeah, I should run away to Canada. Yes. So I've lost a few painfully, very painfully, but I've tried my best to keep my best people, you know, and I think that we're 12 partners, at least 8 of the 12 are internal partners. Yeah. They grew from us from like preschool, which is great for me, which I think is a great thing. So I'm not a fan of your X amount of years jump out on the streets. You know, we are beginning to have a preponderance of tiny firms, you know, and it's not going to help us build this industry and this market as strongly as it should be. That's my own theory. People have different theories, you know. But for you to be able to build a sustainable firm, you have to be someone that doesn't have a high greed level, because you find yourself that you have to encourage people to stay, and people that can have the capacity to go off and start their own, the only way you can encourage them to stay is to ensure you share what you have with them, you know. So you cannot get away with keeping your best people and keeping the money to yourself. So you have to make up your mind. If you're ready to share, you keep your good people. If you're not ready to share, your good people can also start their own, so they walk off, you know. So I'm not, but if I'm answering your question directly, I tell people there's a 10,000 hour theory. You cannot really be good at what you do if you haven't practiced it for 10,000 hours. So do the maths, you know. So I think 7-8 years, you know, is a good time, you know, but you really need to be truly dedicated. I have the story I tell my people here all the time, you know. Why do people think lawyers can afford to make mistakes? You know, pilots cannot afford to make mistakes. The guy that's flying the A380, he makes one mistake, 500 people are dead. The brain surgeon or the gynecologist cannot afford to make a mistake. So why do lawyers, professionals, think they can afford to make mistakes? I tell my guys all the time, think of yourself as a brain surgeon who can't afford to make a mistake, or think of yourself as a pilot who can't afford to make a mistake. So that's it. So that way you start priming yourself to be the excellent professional. And I tell guys too that why do you do something if you don't want to be the best at it? And for you to be best at what you do, you have to be passionate, the right attitude, the right values, ready to work hard.
Absolutely. And you said about 8 of the current partners started from when they were in NYIC. That's NYIC. Like really interesting. Because I know it's not only money that motivates people. So what are the things, the practical things that you think?
They will answer that question best. I don't think I can. But what I tried to do, and I'll tell you, I was tough. Now I'm old, I'm not supposed to be. I was tough on guys, and I was tougher on people who were not trying their best. You know, if you tried your best, there was room for mistakes. If you're not trying your best, there was no room for mistakes. So I was tough in that way. But I was also, I think, fair. You know, I think, you know, they will best say that. And I think that Femi and I were generous. Also, you know, so if you saw fairness, okay, so I could be upset with you or I could scold you, but you knew it was coming from a place of good. It wasn't coming from a vindictive or any other place, you know. So I'm sure in your quiet moment you'll say, yes, I messed up a bit, you know, deserving and all that. So, and I tried to be fair and balanced, and it wasn't difficult for me to say I'm sorry if I made a mistake myself, if I scolded you unduly long. But Femi was the calmer one. I was the more impetuous one. I wasn't as calm as Femi, but you know, we had our different styles. So I think our styles balanced, and so some people get upset and go and report me to Femi, or get upset with Femi and report more. They reported me more to Femi than the other way around. You know? So, but we balanced out, and it was a good partnership for that balance. You know, so people that wanted to work and were focused on their work knew that, you know, if you really wanted to work, this was a place to sit down and work out. Over the years, we try to encourage our smart, good, hardworking young people, and most of them stayed till very late. And some made partners, some didn't. Some at a certain stage for different reasons other than the practice left. You know, some ladies, their husbands relocated. Some guys for different reasons. Sometimes there was one particular guy that I lost that I think that's probably my fault. One of my best guys that I just loved him. You know, but again, we both got mixed up in our personal relationship, mingling with business, you know. So he thought because we had a strong personal relationship, there are certain things, lines he crossed, he shouldn't have crossed. But he was my greatest guy. One of my greatest regrets. But so you then have to learn to manage people, balance the personal with the official, but you have to treat people with respect, particularly women. If you look around the office, we have a preponderance of women. I'm clear in my mind that there's stronger loyalty from the women angle. I'm clear in my mind that women also can be hardworking when they learn to balance the home and work. That's why it's also important that mothers teach their sons to appreciate their wives, so that, because most of those women are able to succeed because their husbands are supportive. For me, when I get home, if I get home before my wife, rarely, but if I do, if there's food, I eat it. There's no food, I enter the fridge and do what I like, you know, and there's no problem about it. I have friends who say they can't eat second day soup. That can't work, you know, in this day and age. What do you mean you can't eat second day soup? So you have to encourage. You can't have girls that have spent, their parents have spent all that money bringing them up, training them, going to school, they're smarter than you, and then you truncate their careers. And then it's also good for the Nigerian economy, for the smarter 50% of the economy of work. So here, we have women, I believe. And I believe you treat women fairly and with respect, you know, you get the best out of them. Touch wood, if their husbands let it go. Because we also had one or two women that their husband said, you can't work those hours. You just can't, you know. So there's that. So we've managed to combine that, you know, and then we've grown. One other thing that's critical is training. You know, again, if you're greedy, you won't spend money on training. You need to spend a lot of money on training. When new areas of the law come up, when there are areas where there are new developments, you know, banking, finance, derivatives, you know, competition law now, you know, and cyber law, you know, digital law, you know, and all those creatives, you know, you just have to spend money to train guys. So we are consistently training our guys locally and internationally. Once there's a new training opportunity, and that costs us a lot of money. If we look at our spend here, you know, training and staff, you know, you know, I think we are the highest spend head as regards training and staff in any comparable institution in this country. You know, nearly 70%, you know, that's high. You know, even when our consultants, when we have our strategic retreats come, they tell us that this is, you know, your cost is too high, you guys can't be making profit. I think we're making small profit. Now, the problem is that value now, can I carry it through my other partners? The value Femi and I had, I was making small profit, meaning that your reward doesn't come until you're actually much older. Now, when you feel you could have received the reward earlier, you know, so that is significant, you know. So again, it depends on your ideology and philosophy. If your philosophy is to build sustainable, then you have to do it, you know, and hope that, you know, you make enough profit margin to sustain the interest of those who are a bit more aggressive. You know? That's it.
I have one last question for you, and two words that, you know, you mentioned a lot, and I picked up, is sustainability and integrity. Now, integrity is a very scarce commodity where we come from, and because of, you know, as a lawyer, sometimes you get personal with your clients, you get to understand the things they do, you might actually see some things you're not happy with, you know, that might conflict with your values. How do you manage such situations?
Let me first answer one question. I don't think integrity is difficult. Nigerian is basically born with a high integrity quotient. You know, I can tell you when I was growing up, you know, I grew up with many mothers and many grandmothers and all that, you know, even till today. I grew up in Ibadan. I was in Ibadan yesterday, and one of my mother's friends passed on, and I went to see the family and all that, and I saw a couple of my older aunties there. Everybody's my aunties. It's only Ibadan that I'm not a big man. You know, if I enter Ibadan, any of my aunties hits me on the head with a handbag and all that, you know, and things like that. So we were brought up, you know, any of your aunties could smack you. You know, it wasn't a function of wait till you talk to your mother or your father. So if you engaged in any infraction, the nearest auntie gave you back and slap. You know, you behaved yourself, you know. So I think that the issue of values, we start from the home, and we all need to contribute to that to bring up proper children with true values. I also think that basically people think that the higher your integrity, the slower it is before you succeed. It's not true. Yeah. It's not true. I don't know where that is. I think it's the world, where the world is turning. People think the higher integrity is. But it's not true. Mm. You know, you can have short-term gains, but short-term gains don't last. Mm. You know, there are many things that have happened to me because there's a perception that there's some integrity quotient here. Mm. You know, I sit down here and people come and talk to me that will you sit on our boards, will you chair our company, will you invest in this or will you invest in that? You know, and going back to your issue, I am a firm believer and I tell my guys in the office here, we do not get involved in our clients' businesses. Mm. We're in the business of supporting and advising our clients. So my style and our style here, we don't invest in our clients. Mm. We may, for instance, I'm invested in a company called Main One.
Yeah.
But I had invested before they became my clients. You don't come as my client and I see your structure and I take advantage. Mm. You know, I don't. I believe that it also affects and conflicts my role as your lawyer.
Mm.
You know, so again, a few people think it's foolish and they think you don't do that way.
You see opportunities,
you make a lot more money. But you know, those opportunities always come back. They always do. They may not come back in that leap, but it comes back. And it comes back in, what do you need as you want to do? What do you need? What do you really need? You need one bed, you need one house, you need one car. Okay, three cars. What do you need? Okay, quantify all of that. So everything else is extra. You know, I give out more money than I spend on myself and my family. So that means I have extra. And I haven't really gone out of my way to look for that. So that's why I'm saying, what do we need? You know, so that's why I'm saying the integrity level attracts good things to you. And there are a number of role models on integrity in this country that we have, and we need to sing their praise. We need to call them out. They need to chest out so that younger people can see that they're role models. And if you follow that path, forget this other path. Yeah. If you follow that path, it's sustainable and it's good and it's sweet. It's different from the one that you can't sleep at night. You know, if you ask my wife, I put my head on the pillow, nothing that's happening, I'm gone.
Yeah.
And until the sun comes out, okay, then my mother taught me that you shouldn't be lying down when the sun is out. So until the sun comes out, I've slept. Nothing bothers me. I don't dream. She says I snore. But I say I've slept. And that's it.
Yeah.
And it's still the next day. And I start the next day. Okay, what's my program? What do I need to do? Now that I've gotten much busier, I need to prioritize and all that, you know. I have great experiences. And I just, like, I'm having fun, you know. I became chairman of the NESG, you know, in my wildest dreams. I didn't know when I started the NESG process at the beginning of 1993. It wasn't in my consciousness, you know. But again, I just found myself. The guy that was chairman before me went into politics, and one day I found myself chairman of NESG. You know, one day I found myself chairman of Sterling Bank. One day I found myself chairman of Dangote Flour. Hey. You know, it's not really by my doing that. That's why I talk to you about this divine thing. Yeah. But I also believe that those parts of good value, integrity, focus on achieving the best for your client, then stands you in good stead. People then, when they're recommending, say, that guy, you know, we work with him, we think we like him, and we think he will do good for us, you know. That's it. And then you find the opportunities, you know, for investment without having to badge into your client's life. You know, and your client trusts you with their most sensitive information because they know you're not looking for a way of making a penny from their life. All you're interested in is your fee. So that's why we tell clients to pay us good fee. But you know, apart from that, I think it's really a good ride, you know. The only other thing I wanted to say is that I wish our regulators also could please just understand that they're regulating for a growing economy. Sometimes they behave as if they're roadblocks, you know. But they need to understand. I guess it's a function of their training. I think the function of their training. But once our regulators understand that they're regulating for a growing economy, then we'll be much better. And I'm a believer in the private sector. I'm a believer that if the private sector does what it needs to do, particularly this issue of sustainability, being able to transfer capital and wealth from one generation to the other, you know, we will surpass all the problems that people keep complaining about. That is the government. Government is only 10% of GDP.
Yeah.
Our government is only 10% of GDP. The other 90% is us. So something that's 10% should not have that impact in our lives. You know. So the only impact should be from the policy formation perspective. And then we only vote into government people that are thinking like us.
Yeah.
You know. So we control it. There are people in America that have never been to Washington, D.C. before. Every Nigerian big man must go to Abuja. Right. They've never, ever, you know, some of the richest men in America have never been to Washington, D.C. before. Mm. They've never even been to the East Coast before. Mm. They've never been the farmer in the middle of nowhere in America. He doesn't care.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we need to create, a true federation where we don't have business in Abuja.
Just that framework. Yeah, that
we need to create that framework. And Abuja people should stop thinking that they have to box into our lives. We don't need them. All I want to do is my local government chairman. What's my business with the president? I have no business with him. Once in 4 years, I vote somebody and that's it. Mm-hmm. Somebody whose policies are proximate to my thinking. Mm-hmm. But once that is clear, done. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where we need to get to. But there's too much government in our lives, you know. We get diaspora remittances that are much higher than our oil earnings. Yes. Yeah. So if we have that already, mm-hmm. what's the problem? Yeah. Why are we worried about what's happening in Abuja? Let everybody create their own oasis of excellence in their own little corner. From the person that has a small mom and pop shop, to the person that has the big law firm, to the person that has a big manufacturing company, create your own oasis of excellence. Treat your staff right, train your staff to be appropriate for the 21st century, you know, make good profit for your shareholders, you know, distribute profit to your shareholders. There will be the multiplier effect and the consumptive capacity of the economy will shoot up. Simple economics. It's not difficult. You know, everybody thinks it's difficult. I don't think it's difficult. And I've told people before, being president of Nigeria is not difficult.
Yeah.
People make governance in Nigeria difficult for their own reasons. But it's not difficult. Because Nigerians are great people. Some of the things we get away with in Nigeria, you can't. I'm telling you, Nigerians are great people and they're easy people.
Yeah.
Some of the things that our leaders get away with, you can't try that in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
You can't try that in Tunisia. You can't even try it in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
You know, but our leaders just do what they like with us, you know, and they get away with it, you know. Fine. So if you have people that are genuinely trusting like that, you need to be good to them.
Absolutely.
I
do agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You need to be good to them. Now, let me ask you a few questions about you. Now, what's your practice around, you know, and why did you start the kind of practice you started?
Okay, so...
Because I've been reading a bit about you too, and I wanted to know who I was going to be talking to.
Yeah.
And I felt that if we hit a chemistry, it would be better for the interview.
Yeah. So, mostly we focus on the entrepreneurship space. Like, I'm really, really passionate about people doing business. I think Nigeria is a very hard country to do business. There are a lot of, you know, policies that's actually halt
stifle you
from growing a business. So my approach, you know, my partner and I approach is how can we make, you know, reduce the legal stress. So our focus is mostly small businesses, SMEs, upcoming businesses
very easily.
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. Tech startups, we work with a lot of tech startups.
Yeah, that's the future.
And then now we also work with like early stage investors because we think it's an economy, you know, it's a system. So we try to play around that entire system. So the people doing business, the people investing in the type of businesses we work with. So we work with a few accelerators, we work with micro VCs.
Do you invest in these businesses? So let me reverse your question. Do you invest in these businesses or you just provide services?
We provide services to them.
Okay, aren't you tempted sometimes? Because you see a business that you know is going to kind of rocket.
We get a lot of questions that why don't we do that? But currently we don't. So unlike you, we haven't said we will never, but right now we just don't think it's we don't do it, we don't think it's right. But what we do though is to connect a lot of our
I think, you know, if the if those who are sponsoring those businesses specifically ask you, I think you should consider it, which is one area we also, I think we went a bit OTT, you know, they specifically ask you. But if they don't ask you, I think you should stay away from it, you know.
That's
you are clear, they're clear demarcation, you're an advisor, you're an investor. But if they specifically ask you, you know, that's one area I may do it differently. There are a few that specifically asked us, particularly in the early days,
and they just said no,
you know. But maybe also we didn't have money. So there was that, you know, and you know, there's something they call in Yoruba language, Kalakala. you know, I'm going around me. Yeah? But seriously, you know, so there were a few like that. But, you know, so if you do have asks, genuine asks, you know, look at it. Because, you know, digital space is going to really skyrocket, you know. And if that happens, you know, you may not forgive yourself. If you didn't take a chunk of it, you know. But I think that's good. Also, have you and your partner have you structured your partnership? How many partners do you have? One.
One for now. Okay. We're small.
A man
we started
or a woman?
5 years ago. Woman.
Okay, fine. So how have you structured your partnership? And they say it's difficult for women to work well together. How have you
I don't know where that theory comes from, because we work greatly together. In addition to the law firm, we also run a legal technology company, and we're doing that together as well. I think we do have our formal partnership structure, which is just an agreement, but it's a lot of trust, like you and Mr. Bawe. It's a lot of.
It's incredible. Like Femi and I, in our first few years, we never looked at a partnership agreement until we made a third partner. We never looked at partnership. Yeah. I didn't even know where my agreement was. So that's great, you know, and I feel you already. You know, we're already kind of. I feel you, you know,
It's a lot of trust. At some point in time, she had to. Because she's married, she has to
be away for the kids and all
but
that. She trusted
with that, you. It's a lot of
trust.
Which
was the thing I told you about Femi and I. You know, we never one day asked, what did you spend money on? What? And there was always the belief that whatever you did was in the best interest of the firm.
Absolutely.
And if you didn't spend money for yourself, there was a good reason.
Exactly.
And we needed to do it. And we
exactly.
just trusted. And that trust is fantastic. You know, if you can have a trust level that's strong and good, nothing beats it. It creates a very tough and strong foundation for your business.
Absolutely.
So that he then is able to withstand other things. So congratulations.
Yeah.
I like you guys a lot.
Thank you. And I think in our partnership, I'm probably be more like Mr. Baba. She's like you.
But that's also a great balance.
Absolutely.
You know, it's always a gift. Someone always pulls the other back.
Yeah.
So when I'm running too far ahead of myself, Femi just pulls me back and say, whoa, come on, slow down. You know? So it's been a great balance, you know, and it's worked well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's worked well. But you're happy?
Oh, absolutely.
Good. And you're making a lot of money?
No, not yet.
But, but let me tell you something. The money will come. Eh?
Yeah.
But what I think I want you and I to do is to keep on talking to our regulators, you know, so that we can have policies that creates an environment that encourages investment and encourages our business. Well, it's been great talking to you.
Same
here. Let's catch up.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot. Nice to meet you, Odun.
Thank you, sir,
your time.
Thank you for listening to this 8th and final episode of season 1 of our Journeys in Entrepreneurship series. This interview was recorded on the 19th of December, 2019 at the Banwo and Ighodalo head office in Ikoyi, Lagos. We look forward to hearing about your aha moments in the comments section below. Journeys in Entrepreneurship's executive producer is Adenike Adeyemi. Our technical producer and director is Elo Iyamu. This series was reviewed by Miriam Adeoti, Feishaya Shogeson, and Loretta Ihel-Mere. The artwork and design was done by Kingsley Effiong, while the video production and editing was by UVisuals. The theme song for this series, which you're also listening to now, was put together by Tani and Shemilore Oludipe. To watch videos of this recording, please visit faithfoundation.org/podcast and also the Faith Foundation YouTube channel. Remember to join the live Q&A conversations for this episode, taking place at 4 p.m. West African time on Friday, the 21st of August, 2020, on Faith Foundation's YouTube page. Also, do remember to subscribe to our social media and podcast channels or visit www.faithfoundation.org/podcast to catch up on previous episodes from this first season. Thank you.